Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Weekly Conservative Talk Radio. My name is Tracy, and Bill's not here yet, but I think he's actually having a problem with Blog Talk Radio. I'm not even on my usual phone line calling into the show, so we'll have to go on with what we've got going and scheduled at this point. We'll see what happens. Maybe we'll have to do what we did a couple weeks ago and transfer phones a little bit later. I did want to get into a lot of things today. I hope everybody had a good weekend, paid a lot of attention to the Olympics, CPAC, and got a chance to see some of the speeches that were given. I just got an opportunity finally to sit down and watch Glenn Beck's keynote address. And I got to say, I don't know what the issue was. He didn't seem to be doing a whole lot of bashing. He did do a certain amount of GOP bashing, but let's face it, it deserves it. I don't know if we can call it progressive light. We can certainly call it Democrat light. But other than that, it was a pretty good speech. There's things in there that I have said recently, as recently as a week ago. Over the weekend, I talked about, the Republicans having politicians in general, having a tiger moment, a moment where they realize that they are not unique, not special, that they are not entitled just because they're the politicians, because they're the elite. So other than that, there was some good stuff in there. I didn't think it was a rousing speech. There was lots of people that were positive about it. There's lots of things that I could read to it. Unlike the Mount Vernon statement that was released on Wednesday, which was about as, I wouldn't even call it conservative white. I don't think Barack Obama would have a hard problem signing that piece of pap. The blandness of it was almost, it was definitely produced by a committee. That's what I have to say about that. It was produced by a committee. There was nothing of substance to it. And the response by most of the community, conservative community movement, has been, in fact, similar to mine. Well, that's not 100% true. Michelle Malkin said, the only statement of conservative principles, and people have been saying that a whole lot, and I've actually stirred a few pots over the weekend by stating quite clearly that our conservative principles are expressed by the Constitution. They are not defined by the Constitution. So I don't think Glenn Beck proclaimed himself the leader of the conservative movement. I don't think he proclaimed himself even necessarily a leader per se. I think what he said was, we have a big problem. People started latching into the idea that there's a big problem, and we need to address it right now. I kind of had this argument with somebody. It was on a blog where they said that the current problem with conservatives and the Obama administration is racist. Well, that's a bunch of shit, bullshit. Not true. Now, their argument was, where were the Tea Parties when, George Bush was spending out of his mind? most of us were being really pissed off that Barack Obama, I'm sorry, that George Bush was spinning out of his mind. Conservatives were screaming bloody murder when TARP was being promoted. And we thought that it was a pretty bad idea for it to be put into place. Unfortunately, Barack Obama, John McCain, and George Bush are all in the pot to share some of that blame. And it's unfortunate that it was done. Now, when I tried to make a point about why things have changed dramatically, the first thing, I've said this over the last couple weeks. My first problem with Barack Obama and his spending is that it is dramatically larger than George Bush's. But you know, for a long time, I argued that deficits were not a bad thing, depending on how the economy was going and depending on our assets. I mean, people have to understand, the average American right now has somewhere between, including their household debt, the debt for their home, somewhere between 6 and 7 times their annual income in debt. Is that right? Yeah. Upwards between 6 and 7 times. Now, that's too much. But 3 to 4 is not an unusual number. 3 to 4 times your annual debt or your annual income in debt. Well, if our annual income is $15 trillion, then our debt should be in the vicinity, if our country was running the same way as we are, somewhere in the vicinity of $45 to $60 trillion. And I'm not talking about unfunded mandates. I'm less concerned by those in certain regards than many other people. But relatively speaking, $15 trillion worth of economy can handle $60 trillion worth of debt. The problem is our federal government has an income of about $2 trillion, and right now we're facing $14 trillion. That's about 7 times the debt. And most of that, and 4 times that, you know, $4 trillion of that has been in the last 2 years. So we've gone from 5 times our income, and of course our income is just under $3 trillion, and it's dropped to just over 2. So we're going from about 3 times our income, not a bad number, to almost 7 times our income, which is a bad number. But still, my point is that our debt load is not, relatively speaking, horribly, nightmarishly bad. So how do I say that my problem with Barack Obama exists, but at the same time, my economic training and the way that I've thought about debt and expenses suggests that the deficit is simply just not that bad yet? Here's how I explained it yesterday. My problem has always is with Barack Obama is in what he says. I give Democrats the benefit of the doubt. I think that they do stupid things. I think they are trying to accomplish bad programs. But I honestly believe that the vast majority of them are doing what they think is good for the country. I give them the benefit of the doubt. Disagree with them, don't agree with the programs, don't agree with the plans, don't even necessarily agree with the goals. But I understand that for the most part, they're trying to do what they think is the best thing to do for the country. So I'll give them props for that. I'll give them the credit for that. And they're trying to do it within the rule of law, within the framework of our Constitution as it exists today, based on all the laws that have been passed, all the Supreme Court decisions that have been made. I can certainly disagree with lots of things that have occurred. I don't agree with Social Security and Medicare. Those are entitlement programs that I don't think the government should have ever, you know, created. But they are there now, and people have come to rely on them. We need to stand by those commitments we made. However, that doesn't mean that I think health care reform is an entitlement that should be granted simply because we have Social Security and because we have Medicare. Two bad programs that people have learned to rely on does not mean we should create a third one. But I've given Democrats the benefit of the doubt. They're trying to do what's best for the country. I gave George Bush that benefit of the doubt. I actually even gave John McCain the benefit of that doubt. Because they want to work for the betterment of the country within the confines of the Constitution and laws and the society that we live in, this country that we live in. Barack Obama has no such desire. He has stated flat out the Constitution is no longer working. He wants to change the Constitution. He wants to create a second Bill of Rights. Now, the second Bill of Rights is the limitations upon government. It is not a list of rights that we should have. It is a list of prescriptions, you know, restrictions on government and what it can do. Barack Obama wants a Bill of Rights on what government can do, not what it's prevented from doing. And those things that it wants, he wants government to be able to do, are things that are completely outside of the realm of what our founding fathers wanted us to do, have, as far as a country is concerned, a framework. Barack Obama has said, our Constitution is too old. It's no longer useful. We need to change it. Barack Obama wants to do what he thinks is better for this country, not within the constitutional framework, not within the framework of laws and structures and institutions that this country has well established. He wants to change them. He wants to break. Oh, I'm going to get myself in a bunch of problems here. He wants to break faith with the past. Now, you know, I'm not much of a traditionalist. But there are reasons why those institutions exist. It's because we have decided that we want to keep them. Not because they necessarily work. Not because they necessarily have been created over the past and this is the way that has to be. But because they are part of the framework of this country. It's kind of like the Constitution is the skeleton of a very large skyscraper. And each floor is each year of our existence. And each new floor that gets added to this skyscraper, the walls get rearranged into different ways. But the foundation pillars exist. They continue to go up through each floor. Now, you can rearrange the walls all you want, but the foundation pillars going up through there don't change. Barack Obama wants to knock those foundation pillars out. He wants to start from scratch and build a whole new set of walls. Well, that's ridiculous. You can't do that. You might be able to do it in future building, you know, levels as it goes up, if you make the changes now and plan for those changes, but he wants no such thing. He wants to take those foundation pillars out and rearrange the walls to his liking. It's stupid. There is no benefit of the doubt to give him. He has said, I want to change the framework of the United States. I am not interested in following the Constitution. That type of presentation is dangerous. It doesn't make any difference if he wants to spend $500 million or $500 trillion or $1 trillion or even $2 or even $3 trillion. He wants to fundamentally change the foundation and structure of this country. And for that reason, I oppose everything that he wants to do. Everything. Without exception. It would appear that the Republican Party kind of feels the same way, that some of our traditions, our foundations, our institutional foundations, are no longer useful to us. Now, if this sounds like Tracy has gotten off on some god-awful, horrible tangent that she's never done before, because, you know, I'm not much of a traditionalist, that's not the point. I don't disagree that marriage is a foundational institution. I don't disagree I don't believe that marriage as a foundational institution has to be fundamentally changed in a way that it ceases to exist. I simply want to expand upon it. So I'm not taking that foundational institution and destroying it. I am building upon it. That's my particular point of view about it. Others may disagree. Even in possibility, my dear friend William, I have a sneaking suspicion that what we have going on here is a problem for people being able to call in. I wonder if everything is okay. Let's see. Is anybody listening on tweets? If you're listening, let me know that the show is getting out. Let's find out if Bill is around anywhere out there and find out what's going on. Because I want to get into the next part. And I know Bill wants to get in on this conversation as far as Beck is concerned. So let's see. Can we do this? Because, you know, I would like to get even the music to go on. Let's see. Let's put this on for a second and try and get William back on the line. I would say William is lost into the atmosphere, nowhere to be found. Too hard for me to check and see if the phones are working from here. So if you are around and you got a chance, go ahead and give me a dial-up, see if you can call in. The number is 1-646-652-2828. Give me a call. Let's find out if all the phones are working or if somebody can get in. Or tweet me and let me know that things are going on. In the meantime, I'm going to go on to something else that I was kind of thinking about today and posted to other people. What is our particular problem with Congress right now? What kind of approach do we want to take with Congress? Going back to this tiger minute, this tiger mea culpa, that he isn't, you know, special, that he is needs to be following the same sets of rules that we do. I started thinking about what is it that Barack Obama, Harry Reid, and Nancy Pelosi are doing. And I started thinking about, you know, this is our country, the property of our country. You know, Congress, the President of the United States is not the person in charge of the whole United States. Unlike a king or a queen, you know, he is, you know, Barack Obama is not my boss. He is the executive branch of the government of the United States. Nancy Pelosi is the Speaker of the House, one of the co-operators of the government of the United States, along with Chief the Chief Justice, being the third branch leader. Now, as a functional thing, we pretty much let the president run the country. He's not actually running the country. He's running the government. The distinction might be just, I don't know, splitting hairs. But I don't think so. I think we've decided that, certainly through Barack Obama has decided, that when he says this is what I want to have done, he thinks as the President of the United States, the whole world, the whole country, should jump to his particular whim, that this is what he wants and he's president. Well, let me use his words. I won. That's, therefore, we need to do it his way. But the President of the United States is not the President of the United States. He is the President of the United States government. He's the leader of our government. And that government is just one institution in the United States. It is the portion of the United States that is in charge of taking care of the country, the property. You can kind of think of it like this way. The United States government is, been hired by the people of the United States, the owners of the property, to be the landscaper. Make sure that the grounds are kept up, that the fences surrounding the property are manned and, can repel any particular intruders that might approach or attempt to, inflict harm upon the property. And, to the extent that we have determined what we want the property to look like, how we want it to operate, how we want it to serve our interests, we want the government to handle the resources of the property and manage it. But by no stretch of the imagination is the landscaper one of the owners. Barack Obama is a citizen just like everyone else, and he gets exactly the same amount of say in how the property should be managed. But as the landscaper, the gardener, if you will, he doesn't get to determine how the property will be disposed of or used. He just manages the performance of the property within the framework that the owners, us, have set up for him as the groundskeeper, as the landscaper, as the gardener to take care of things. Now, it's true, I'm certain, that servants in a household, after they've been there for a very, very long time, start thinking of the household as theirs. I think that's not a very professional way that they look at it, and I think most professional servants would be aghast that I would even suggest it. But I think there are a great number of people that end up in those type of situations that after a long period of time think that they are a part owner, that they have some say in how things should be run. The owners usually disabuse them of that particular mindset pretty quickly once it expresses itself. We need to kind of disabuse Barack Obama of his mindset that as President of the United States, he has any ownership interest in how this country is to be run. He runs the government. That's it. Nothing more. He's not my boss. He's certainly not the boss of the state of Wisconsin. I am pretty much certain that, even the Democrat, Jim Doyle would tell Barack Obama to go stick it up his butt skin if Barack Obama turned around and said, this is what I want Wisconsin to do. We have a great number of governors right now that are dusting off the 10th Amendment and saying, just so you're perfectly well aware, Mr. President, the sovereign state of Texas
is not your playground. We are not subject to the whims of the federal government. And the Constitution gives us the ability to tell you to go stick it up your ass. I think Barack Obama needs to have a whole lot more of that. At this point, the American people over the last year have been telling Barack Obama to take his health care and stick it up his ass. Well, apparently he likes things stuck up his ass because he just wants to do more of what he's been doing for the last year. This health care summit, which I think is a really bad idea for Republicans. They are not mentally strong enough to face Barack Obama in small numbers without the support of many people to protect them. But I guess they're going to go anyways. Not a really good idea, guys. Wish you wouldn't do that, but they're going to do it anyways. And I would prefer if they didn't, because, you know,
if you didn't care by you, we would zigzag away through the bottom of pain, occasionally glancing up through the rain, wondering which of the foe is to blame. And watching the pigs on the wing,
kind of hope that I could probably get into a little bit of animals there, a little bit of dogs lying down with fleas and, you know, lying down with dogs and getting up with fleas. You know, the Republicans just do not have the ability to stand up to Barack Obama when it's on his territory and his agenda. I've seen the agenda for the summit and, you know, this is a joke. It's an absolute joke. If the Republicans walk out of there, as a matter of fact, that's kind of what I would hope that they're actually going to do, is they're going to go there, they're going to listen politely to Obama's little introductory things, and they're going to listen to his, you know, people make their little presentations. And then I think what they need to do is, when he says, so what are your ideas, I think they say, you know, we've presented our ideas, here they are, give them five of them, and let him say no, 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 and they go, okay, that's fine, thank you very much, and then turn around, get up, and walk out. That's what I want them to do. If they're going to go. If they're going to go. I think it's a bad idea for them to go, but if they're going to go, that's what they need to do. They really need to embrace this idea that they are the party of no. There's no shame in deciding that when Barack Obama says, I want to rob a bank, and we object, to actually say no when he says, okay, let's just rob a 7-Eleven. If it's wrong to rob the bank, it's wrong to rob the 7-Eleven. You know, saying no to bad ideas is not being mean. It's not being bad. It's saying no to bad ideas. The American people have said no to the bad idea of health care reform. There's no reason for Republicans to go, well, you know, we kind of agree with you. The American people are stupid, and we don't need to listen to them. So we'll just take your idea and we'll just temper it a little bit. Well, I have no desire for the Republicans to do health care light. That's not the goal here. That's not what we want to have happening.
Maybe we can call, you know, Nancy Pelosi the maid, Harry Reid the butler. Nah, that's too gender specific. She's Speaker of the House. She's the butler. He's the maid. Yeah, I kind of like that idea a lot. You know, the maid is subservient to the butler. Harry Reid is subservient to Nancy Pelosi. That actually makes sense to me. That seems to be pretty consistent. So, Nancy Pelosi is the butler in the People's House. Not the Democrats' house. Not the Republicans' house. The People's house. The people's property. Property being not a singular thing that you can pick up and walk around, but the entire estate. I did kind of get to the idea that if Barack Obama is the gardener and Nancy Pelosi's the butler and Harry Reid is the maid, you know, Barack Obama is the gardener. Chauncey. What was the name of that movie? Chauncey the Gardener became with Peter Sellers playing Chauncey. And all he did was he kept saying these gardening rules. He was an idiot. He was a moron. But people were giving him all kinds of oohs and ahs for his wisdom. You know, Barack Obama is that way. Lots of oohs and ahs for his wisdom. He says nothing. The man has all the competence, you know, of a gardener, and we've put him in charge. People! Scott Brown. I wonder if I said this. Anybody remember? Scott Brown was not a conservative. I wonder, did I say that? Let's look back at the notes. Scott Brown. I suggested that he wouldn't make it. Why wouldn't he make it? Too many going on? Scott Brown loses. Did I suggest, you know, I've said it to a lot of people, but I don't know if I said it on the show. Scott Brown is not a conservative. He might be anti-healthcare reform, but, you know, he's pretty much a Republican. Surprise. He ran as a Republican. There's a lot of people in the conservative movement that supported him on the issue of health care reform. And I'm thinking that that's probably a really bad idea for the movement. Maybe this is what Beck is doing. I mean, you know, his speech at CPAC was the first time that I've actually listened to him for more than 30 seconds. I don't watch a show. I don't listen to him on the radio. So it wasn't like I've had lots of experience listening to him. Maybe he's done this in the past. Scott Brown is a Republican. Not a conservative. As a movement, I think it's a bad idea for the conservative movement to be supporting anything other than a pure conservative. I don't think the conservative movement in the United States, and unfortunately it's not a leader-driven movement. It is a grassroots Tea Party from the bottom up movement. We have a lot of celebrities that are part of the movement. They're not the leaders. Rush Limbaugh has said he is not, and I agree, he is not. He's a really good conservative Republican. Nothing wrong with that. Ron Paul is a really good conservative libertarian. Nothing wrong with that either. But I think the movement needs to avoid using its power, its energy, to drive candidates either going against or more or less, actually should be supporting, not so much against, but supporting candidates that are not pure. God, I almost hate to say that. You know, I think if the movement comes across a candidate that embodies the conservative principles, then I think the movement is perfectly fine supporting them. But when we reach across into a situation like Massachusetts, where we have a Republican, what would be considered a pretty liberal Republican in virtually any other state except for Massachusetts or San Francisco, I think it's a mistake for the conservative movement to lend its support and power to such individuals, because it results as a compromise in our own principles. Now, I think the conservatives that lived in Massachusetts, that live in Massachusetts, are perfectly within their rights, of course, to vote for somebody that is not conservative principle pure, because the odds of actually having somebody that's even remotely electable in that situation is probably, you know, impossible. Some people have made similar arguments for, I don't remember what his first name is, Kirk in Illinois, that he's not a good conservative. He may be a good Republican. He may have on occasion some conservative leanings, but to suggest that he stands on conservative principles is not even a stretch. It's an impossible reach. So if we have that situation, the movement needs to avoid trying to pick representatives or even senators based on issues. I think the movement has to be more pure than that. I think individual conservatives in individual states, when they're voting for their representatives, either House or Senate, need to consider the candidates that are available and to get the one that will move us closest to conservative principles, even if it's not pure. You know, I think people are right. Scott Brown is the best that could have been gotten there, but I think, you know, lots of people are at this point calling him, you know, a traitor, and I don't see it. He certainly did not suggest in anything that I saw or read that he was going to be a diehard lockstep with the conservative movement on their principles. He is certainly more socially liberal than many of the conservative movement would be willing to be tolerated. And he suggested that he would be less than pure as far as the GOP was concerned, that he was not going to be beholden to the GOP in his votes. I think that is exactly what he is doing here. So calling him a traitor for doing what he said he was going to do, I think it's crazy. I think what happened is a whole lot of people latched onto him as a possible anti-Democrat, anti-Obama, anti-healthcare candidate, and then forgot that what he was not, was a conservative. The fact that they call him a traitor is inconsistent with what he himself said he was going to do and what he planned on doing. So, you know, I would prefer to have the movement, in fact, stay away from non-conservatives. Even when those potential candidates are supportive of a conservative issue, they lack conservative principles. which means they might be good on some issues and not so good on other issues. It's not a place to be wasting our energy, wasting our money. If we see a good, solid, principled conservative, I think the movement should support that person, whether it's a House, a Senate, or a state seat. But if they're not, I don't think we should be doing so. And for voters, conservative voters in individual states, I think they need to recognize, I think pragmatism suggests, that voting for Scott Brown in Massachusetts was a smart move. Now, of course, there's a whole lot of people, including Eric Erickson at Red State, that suggested that and are suggesting now that the conservative movement needs to be pragmatic. It cannot be, it cannot hold the GOP, specifically the GOP, to a pure position, pure conservative position. That the GOP has to be more pragmatic. It has to legislate. It has to, you know, deal with the political realities. No, I think the movement can remain pure. I think individual conservatives can be pragmatic when it comes to their state representatives, even to their, you know, national representatives at the House level or the Senate. Where I disagree with the idea of being pragmatic is president. I think we need to hold firm on this one particular point. I think we need to say that we want a presidential candidate that, in fact, is going to be conservative, is going to hold conservative principles, and is going to stand for the expression of those conservative principles in the form of supporting the Constitution. Now, that means being willing to not vote for the lesser of two evils. I personally did not vote for John McCain last time around on exactly that basis. I was not going to vote for the lesser of two evils. I was not going to vote for a president who did not share my principles as far as how this country should run. Yes, I understood that that was going to probably, if there was a lot of people like me, and there are, mean that somebody like Barack Obama was going to become president. There was lots of justification I made, including one that if liberalism gets a chance to really run the country the way it wants, I think the vast majority of the American people are going to go, hell no, and rebel against it. And if, in fact, Barack Obama did what I hoped he would do, which is, you know, to be really bad as a president in the sense that he had no clue how to do things and he would screw things up, you know, frankly, that's kind of what's happening. He is such a shitty leader, such a shitty executive, that he couldn't run this country, you know, if we gave him training wheels for his peewee bike and an extra little chin strap on for his helmet. All right. So that's my particular point as far as the conservative movement is concerned. It needs to be supportive of conservatives. It needs not to be supporting Republicans or moderates simply because they are holding a position that we agree on. Individual conservatives can support in their own states those type of proto-conservatives if they think it is appropriate for their particular state. But I think the movement needs to be more pure about things. As far as the president is concerned, I think we all need to be more pure about that. it would seem to me, well, let's talk about Ron Paul for a moment. Ann Coulter, I don't know if she said it in her speech over the weekend or if she said it in some other way. She agrees with everything Ron Paul says except national security. I don't know that I would go that far. It is true that he has, is he principled? Does he stand on conservative principles? Probably. I probably have to do some more research on it. I'm willing to consider it. I have a big problem with the national security side of it. It is clear he is anti-Iraq, Afghanistan, and I think, based on what I've heard, that if he, in fact, were in charge, we would be yanking all of our troops out of those two places right off the bat. I think that's a horrifyingly bad idea. When our founding fathers suggested we shouldn't get involved, we were in a situation where it was 6 months to get involved with France. By the time we found out something needed to be done with France, by the time we could put things together, by the time we could respond to it, it would be 6 months from the time the event happened. Now it's 6 hours or less. Something happens in another country, that can affect the United States, 30 minutes, 6 hours, 12 hours at the worst. In that kind of situation, let's go back to our idea of the estate, of the property of the United States. One of the goals of the landscaper, of the groundskeeper, is to make sure that the property lines are maintained, that intruders cannot go breaking through the fences or the walls, that security is maintained, as I suggested to Victoria today. I said, if we have created in this house the most beautiful house, that everything we could ever want is here in this house, and it is the most perfect house in the whole planet, what we can be pretty guaranteed about is once everybody else finds out about it, there's going to be massive hordes of people all around this house trying to get into this house to take what we have, to participate in what we have. Or, realizing that they cannot do so, trying to burn the house down so that we can't have it. Because it's unfair that we should have it and they don't. So there needs to be some security. There needs to be a presence in a way that, where our founding fathers thought they had the two grand oceans as a buffer to protect us from the goings-on. That buffer doesn't exist anymore. We need to be able to have a buffer that goes out, that needs to stretch out farther than what our founding fathers would have naturally allowed before. The idea that France, if it decided to attack us, could do so, in 30 minutes' notice, means that we need to have a way to watch France, or watch Russia, or watch China. And that necessarily means to have a presence that extends from our shores. I think our founding fathers would have supported that general idea in those circumstances. And that's my problem with Ron Paul. Maybe he is a little bit too libertarian for me. I am much more willing to tolerate a certain amount of government intervention in our lives, more so than the libertarians. I got into an argument with somebody recently on the idea of how much involvement in the markets constitutes government interference. Now, I don't think it is government interference to regulate markets in the sense that we want to make sure that if a small stock buyer purchases stock and then the price 2 minutes later goes way up, that the stock brokerage firm doesn't go, oh, we didn't actually get a hold of your stock until 3 minutes after the fact. We want to be able to go to that stock trading company and be able to regulate their behavior to prevent that type of behavior. So in that regard, I'm okay with government regulation to make sure that trade, not just between our country and another country, but trade between one state and another state, between corporations and corporations, between corporations and individuals, between individuals and individuals, is done in a way that gives confidence to people in the trading event, the natural course of doing business. So that government intervention is fine for me when that's all it is. When a government, you know, decides that we want you to buy stock in this industry but not stock in that industry, and they make it prohibitive for us to buy stock in one industry or assist people in buying stock in the industry that they've picked, at that point, government is not regulating the market. It has jumped into the market to pick winners and losers, to pick direction. And I think at that point, that type of government involvement is uniformly and without exception wrong, which is why the government picking up and owning GM and Chrysler and, you know, AIG's insurance unit is a bad idea. It is government stepping into the marketplace where it has no business to be. That interference in the marketplace is interference. It is government getting out of the range of where it's supposed to be. I think the idea that unfettered markets, unregulated markets, are better markets than somewhat regulated markets is not true. I think unfettered markets create situations in which participants can take advantage unfairly of smaller and more diverse participants. I don't necessarily care for it a whole lot. So I agree with some regulation, and I don't think Ron Paul does. Could be wrong. Probably need to spend a little bit of time, you know, talking to the Paulians and seeing what they're like. Mike Huckabee, on this particular point, upon one of the reasons why he didn't attend CPAC this time, I don't know why he would complain that he only got like 3% of the straw vote. You know, he wasn't there. Suggested that the problem with CPAC was it was becoming less Republican. Duh, dude, you know, it's not called the Republican Action Committee. No, it's the conservative. What does the P stand for? Action Committee. You know, it is for conservatives. It's not for Republicans. You know, because you're a Republican does not mean you're a conservative. Because you're a conservative does not mean you're a Republican. My general idea is if the conservatives are not Republican enough for Mike Huckabee, that's okay because Mike Huckabee is too Republican for us conservatives. I don't know about Mitt Romney. He apparently, in his speech, came across okay. He didn't do very well in the straw poll, from what I can tell. But, you know, it would suggest to me that there is some place for Ron Paul in the conservative movement. The question is, the point is, not in the leadership. I think we need to be in a situation where a lot of what Ron Paul says as far as our economy is concerned or how government should behave, not what it should do, but how it should behave, is probably correct. I am a moneyist as far as economics is concerned. I'm more Austrian, although I have an affinity for the University of Chicago and Mr. Friedman. I still think that the Fed is a good idea. It's just been badly handled recently. Mainly because of some of the things that it was designed to do, it no longer can do. One of the things it was designed to do was to manage the money supply in a way that was, you know, to primarily on interest and inflation, prevent either one of them from getting way out of control. And obviously, it did so in the 70s. There was a lot of externals to that. But over the last 20 years, the theory of money has been changing dramatically. It gives the Fed a great deal less control than it pretends it has. And for that reason, I think the Fed is okay in its place. It is not what it used to be. It cannot be where it used to be. We as a country, as a society, not just the United States, but most of first world and second world humanity, can create money in a way that used to be limited to just, you know, governments. When a bank or a company can issue $1 billion worth of bonds, and those bonds create cash for the bank for the corporation to use, that is new money for all practical purposes that was not created by the Treasury. Not going to get into the details of that. It's confusing for even most people. My point is, the Fed is not the danger it used to be because we have outgrown it in a lot of ways. All right. It's been an unusual week. Find out what happened to Bill this week. CPAC is done. We're getting into the primary season over the next couple of weeks. So we'll start talking about some of the candidates that are running. We'll also find out what's going to happen after the healthcare summit. We'll talk about that next week also. To those of you that were listening tonight, thank you. Just our regular shout-outs to those that follow us. We'll get a chance to talk to you next week. Until then, try and keep it pure, people. Conservatives, principles. Have a good week. Well, for those of you that have hung on into the green room, well, let's see. Don't know what happened to Bill. Nothing on tweets to let me know what happened there, and you know, nothing in the email box to suggest that, you know, something was going on. I hope everything is okay for him. Hope he just got caught in a snowstorm or went out with family, and we'll see what happened from there. We won't do any of the green room today other than this few minutes, because usually it's a nice chat that Bill and I have. So, for everyone else, have a good week, and we will talk to you next week.